Now from the KSFR Newsroom, At Noon looks at the day's top local news headlines for this Wednesday, September 11th. Reacting to President Obama's speech to the nation last evening regarding the Syrian crisis, Senator Tom Udall repeated his call for the U.S. to use diplomatic, economic, and political pressure to ensure Russia and Syria keep their commitment to surrender Syria's chemical weapons to international control. Congressman Ben Ray Lujan says that if Syria is serious about compliance, then the U.S. should continue seeking a diplomatic process working with our international allies. And Senator Martin Heinrich says that the recent diplomatic progress would not have been possible without the credible threat of U.S. military force. Plans for a vote by Congress on authorization for a military response have been put on hold for the time being. Santa Fe police have announced an arrest in connection to Tuesday's discovery of a man found dead near Rosario Cemetery. The victim's identity is not being released pending notification of next of kin. 37-year-old Orlando Yazzi is now being held in the Santa Fe County Jail without bond on charges of murder. Yazzi admitted to police he had been fighting with the victim and kicked him in the head several times while he was laying on the ground. Alcohol is believed to be a factor in the case. The New Mexico Water Quality Control Commission has approved modifications to the Environment Department's copper rules. Tuesday's newly approved rules were developed by the Environment Department with an industry outreach process, along with bipartisan support of a group of state lawmakers. After years of litigation by copper mining concerns, law required the state to develop regulations that clearly set forth the appropriate controls to prevent or abate groundwater pollution. The new rules now establish multiple ground and surface water protections applied uniformly to all mining ventures, unlike the case-by-case regulations in years past. Meanwhile, the New Mexico Environmental Law Center opposes the modifications, saying they allow mining concerns to violate the state's Water Quality Act. They plan to take the matter to the State Court of Appeals. We'll be hearing from a spokesperson from the Law Center a bit later here at noon. At tonight's Santa Fe City Council meeting, Mayor David Koss will proclaim September Preparedness Month in our city. Then Thursday, the city will conduct a public meeting on its hazard mitigation plan at 5:30 at the Community Convention Center. The meeting will be focused on long-term strategies to reduce disaster losses, both human and material, as a result of any of a broad scenario of emergency situations. A copy of the draft mitigation plan is available online at the city's website. The State Taxation and Revenue Department is investigating a scam involving offers of cheaper auto insurance. New Mexicans have reported receiving automated phone calls claiming to be from the Motor Vehicle Division and offering discounted insurance, asking folks to call back to a 575 area code number. Taxation and Revenue says the MVD does not sell insurance and warns consumers against making themselves vulnerable to fraud. Enrollment at all New Mexico State University campuses continues to decline. The Las Cruces Sun News reports this year's numbers are 5% lower than 2012, continuing a trend observed for several years. NMSU's Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment says that a key factor in the decline is a drop in the number of New Mexico high school graduates. Another portion of the decline is among graduate students, decreasing their numbers by almost 6% this year. Santa Fe Public Schools hosts a community forum tomorrow evening to discuss the Atalaya School construction project. Thursday's 5:30 meeting at Conney Elementary will feature a presentation by the Community District Working Group, followed by a Q&A session. The $13 million new construction at Atalaya includes 23,000 square feet of additions with classrooms, restrooms, and a new gym, among others. Construction began last month and is expected to be completed by June of next year. The 75th edition of the State Fair gets underway today at Albuquerque's Expo New Mexico and runs through Sunday, September 22nd. This year, the fair is once again condensed to 12 consecutive days. Daily attendance has grown from 8,000 people a day way back in 1938 to now some 35,000 people daily in recent years. And weather for Santa Fe. Partly cloudy skies expected today with a 60% chance for showers and thunderstorms, highs in the mid-70s. The heaviest rains have moved off to our east today, but will set up over us once again tomorrow, says meteorologist Sean Bennett at the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque.
The driver for this is an upper low, which is actually over northwestern Arizona, southern Nevada, southwestern Utah, and it shifts slightly away from the state, which allows the plume to push back towards the center. So tomorrow we'll have that moisture plume back towards the center of the state and back up over the region, including Santa Fe. So we'll look for another round of the kind of heavy rain we saw yesterday.
Thursday brings an 80% chance for rains throughout the day. And the current Santa Fe temperature, now 66 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Santa Fe Reporter, providing local news and arts and entertainment information to more than 60,000 readers each week. The Reporter is available every Wednesday at over 300 locations in Santa Fe and the surrounding area, and on the web at sfreporter.com.
13 minutes past the hour as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Yesterday, the New Mexico Water Quality Control Commission issued a ruling regarding copper mining and potential groundwater contamination that accompanies the mining process. Some groups are voicing concern over the new rules. One of them is the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. We're joined now by Bruce Frederick from the center. Bruce, tell us about the ruling.
The commission, after a hearing that occurred a couple months ago, they voted to adopt a rule that the New Mexico Environment Department had proposed, but Freeport-McMoRan, which is a big international copper mining company that runs the Chino and the Tyrone mines down in Grant County, the company actually wrote the significant part of the regulation that the department is proposing. And those significant parts allow the company to pollute groundwater, and that's important for Freeport because they have already polluted a lot of groundwater, and so this regulation actually kind of lets them off the hook somewhat.
And can you tell us specifically, how does the mining process lead to pollution of groundwaters?
This is an open-pit copper mine. They have a few open pits. These are enormous holes in the ground. The copper ore is a sulfide ore, and that sulfide, once it's exposed to air and some water, that creates sulfuric acid, believe it or not, and that sulfuric acid then is mobile. It leaches out metals, including heavy metals, and that eventually reaches groundwater. So that's it's called acid mine drainage. It's associated with what are called heap leach piles. They basically pile up millions of tons of rock, grind it up, and then they rain down this called raffinate. It's an acidic solution also, which also causes groundwater pollution. And they made these giant piles. They just put them directly on the ground without lining them.
And putting down a lining can prevent that?
Yes. Had they done a liner, yes, that would have prevented the groundwater pollution. And in fact, nobody does heap leaching without lining the heap leach pile anymore. And even under the department's rule, these ore piles, most of them will be lined because it's just stupid not to line it because you waste product. But for some reason in the 80s, they decided not to line them. But it's also the waste rock and the tailings. And those are massive, you know, they're measured in square miles, thousands of acres. And they will pollute groundwater. They have polluted groundwater. And so under the department's rule, which Freeport wrote, you can do these massive stockpiles of acid-generating material. As long as you put in some pumping wells down gradient and you capture the pollution. The problem is you're still talking about thousands of square acres of pollution. And this pollution doesn't go away. It lasts essentially forever, certainly hundreds of years. You know, we're in the middle of a drought and water is scarce, and the Environment Department is passing rules that, pollute groundwater resources. It just doesn't make sense. They're supposed to prevent pollution, and they're passing rules to expressly encourage it and allow it.
We understand there was a panel of bipartisan lawmakers involved in the decision, yes?
Not exactly. The Water Quality Control Commission is, I think, it's a panel of 14 members that Governor Martinez arranged. I think we got one vote against the rule. And the rule, by the way, we believe it's unconstitutional, and it violates the Water Quality Act, and we're going to appeal it. But no, there was an advisory committee, but the advisory committee came out with a pretty good rule, and then Freeport contacted the general counsel for the department, who is now the secretary, Mr. Flynn. He agreed to adopt Freeport's language against the wishes of his staff. And the language I'm talking about is the language that allows pollution of groundwater. And it does this by just waiving water quality standards for the benefit of Freeport-McMoRan.
The State Environment Department is charged with making decisions that protect New Mexico resources and citizens alike. Why do you think they ruled as they did?
Well, it's something I've never seen. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm a little bit, I don't know what, it's almost like ALEC, the industry group, just wrote legislation and then got Congress to pass it, or, you know, a state legislature to pass it. That's kind of the model. Industry wrote the regulation and then got the political body to just pass it.
A few times you've made reference to private industry actually writing part of these regulations based on their own self-interests. Can we ask you on what do you base that assertion?
Well, in the advisory committee process, we participated in that process, and so the department's consultant, a man by the name of Bill Olson, he came out with a great draft of the rule, but he would come out with these various drafts in consultation with technical staff at the department, and then all of us would comment on it, and we would have access to each other's comments. And so we had access to Freeport-McMoRan's comments on the various draft rules. So the department's consultants, Mr. Olson, and the technical staff rejected the Freeport's comments that would allow groundwater contamination all through this advisory committee process. And then after the advisory committee process was done, those same comments showed up in the department's official proposal for the rule. So we know exactly where the source of the comments are.
How long will the appellate process take?
You know, the appellate process, the appeal goes directly to the Court of Appeals. We have 30 days to file the appeal. And then the appellate process can take anywhere from 1 to 3 years.
Bruce Frederick for the Environmental Law Center, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
KSFR is supported by the City of Santa Fe and is proud to air the full live Santa Fe City Council meetings beginning at 5 p.m. on the second and last Wednesday of every month from the City Council Chambers at 200 Lincoln Avenue. Agendas and packets for City Council meetings are available on the Friday prior to each City Council meeting on their website, santafenm.gov. To get on the City Council agenda, contact the City Clerk at 955-6521.
20 minutes past the hour here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. Down at Albuquerque's Expo New Mexico, the New Mexico State Fair kicks off its 75th anniversary today, its Diamond Jubilee edition. With us to talk about it now is Michael Henningsen, Media and Marketing Director, who works for both Expo and the fair. Michael, and not that we mean to imply you were actually there way back when, but what was that first year like?
It looks like, according to the history books, we had about 8,000 people that year, and it was a week-long event. So things have changed considerably. These days, we have about an average of 35,000 people per day, and we run over a 12-day period, and we see, last year, we saw 426,000 people come through the gates in that period of time. So things have changed dramatically.
And what are some of the major changes in the facility and events over the years?
We have an arena now. Of course, Tingley Coliseum came to the grounds in the 1950s, and that allowed us to do concerts and rodeos. Back in the day, it was really just a few rides and a couple of exhibits. There weren't really even very many buildings here. There were just two or three buildings. Now we have about three dozen buildings on 236 acres, so it's kind of a sprawling fairgrounds, if you will. And we have exhibits from all over the state, everything from art to leathercraft.
And when did the horse track appear?
The track was here in 1938. It's the oldest racing license in the state. So it was the first, and it's the oldest.
Tell us about some of the challenges the fair has faced over the years.
Well, most recently, the economy has been a challenge. You know, just trying to keep up with inflation and the economic woes that everybody has been going through has been difficult. We operate like a business. We're an enterprise fund, so we're responsible for raising our own budget. We don't get any taxpayer funding to put on the fair. So we raise all of our money through putting on events and whatnot during the off season, and we use that money to put on the fair every September. So we really have to operate like a business and keep our belts tight and really watch the bottom line.
And looking at the sluggish economy in recent years, have you had to lower prices?
Well, we've had to keep prices in line with the national averages. We haven't really lowered prices, but by the same token, we haven't raised prices either.
And looking back, what does Expo and the State Fair have to be proud of?
Going back just 3 years ago, we had a $1.8 million deficit. And in just 3 years, we've managed to turn that deficit around into a surplus. And we managed to increase our attendance last year by about 2% over the previous year, which doesn't sound like a lot. But going into that year, we'd had declining attendance for about the previous 6 years. So we really turned some important corners last year, both in terms of revenue and attendance.
And how big a problem is parking or traffic associated with the fair?
Parking is really not an issue. General parking was free last year, and it's free again this year. Traffic can be a little bit of an issue, but we have Albuquerque Police Department, the outskirts of the fairgrounds, directing traffic and making sure that everything runs smoothly.
And finally, give us your assessment of what you think the main reason is people go to the fair.
People come for the food. About 9 out of 10 people will tell you that they come here to get their fair food. So that's probably the most popular. Second on the list, I think, would be probably the family-oriented exhibits that we have. We call them spectaculars, and they're things like the Cirque Equinox. We have a 300-foot zip line. We've got a 5D forest adventure, all kinds of new things for the kids to do. Wolves of the World is a new exhibit that we're having at the fair this year. So all those family-oriented exhibits are extremely popular.
Michael Hanningson, many thanks for joining us here at noon. The New Mexico State Fair runs today and every day through September 22nd. 25 minutes past the hour, At Noon continues. Plague has been infecting New Mexicans for much of our history. Dr. Paul Edestad is the public health veterinarian with the New Mexico Department of Health and joins us now. Doctor, another case of plague has just been reported in the state. Would you please tell us about that?
Well, we've had one more. Now we have a total of two for this year. This case was just laboratory tested and tested positive last week. This is an 11-year-old girl from Torrance County who was hospitalized and luckily is recovering and has gone back home. The first case was about a month ago, and that was in a 15-year-old boy, and that was also from Torrance County, and he also recovered and went home.
Is this an unusual time of the year for reporting of such cases?
Typically, most of our cases occur in June and July, so it's a little later this year, but again, we were in a drought earlier and didn't have that much rain, so when we get a little bit more rain, that allows the fleas to survive a little bit longer outside and potentially jump on and bite people, which is how we think these cases occurred, through bites of infected fleas.
And how does New Mexico rank amongst other states for cases of the plague?
Well, if you look historically over the last few decades, a little over half of the cases of plague that have occurred in the United States have happened in New Mexico. This year, there have only been two cases in the United States, and both of these cases have been here in New Mexico. It's a difficult question to understand why. I think one of the reasons is our climate, our pinyon juniper areas, support a wide variety of species of rodents and a wide variety of species of fleas, and I think that allows plague to persist in this area year after year.
Does the disease occur most often in rural areas?
It does usually occur more in rural regions. We really haven't had any cases in more urban areas. Again, there are a lot more of types of rodents, the rock squirrels, the prairie dogs, and the smaller mice in the rural areas, and the number of different types of fleas also. So it is a predominantly more rural. But again, we have urban areas where a lot of these types of rodents also occur, so it's not like it can't happen there either.
And what's the best way to avoid getting the plague?
You know, unfortunately, it really isn't possible to eradicate plague from the rodent population. You can't totally eliminate a whole species of rodent. But what you can do is do a number of prevention things to really reduce your risk. People need to understand that this is a fairly rare disease. It doesn't occur very often. But some of the key things people can do to reduce their risk, one of them is keep your pets from roaming and hunting. You know, the dogs and cats can bring the fleas from the rodents back into your home if you allow them to be out hunting. And then clean up areas around near your house where rodents could live, like wood piles or brush piles, junk or abandoned vehicles. And then, of course, if your pet is sick, please bring him into the veterinarian, because we have had cases where we've had cats that have been able to give plague back to people. And then your hay and wood and compost piles, just keep those as far away from your home as possible. Don't leave your pet food or water out where the mice can come and get it. All these things are trying to keep the rodents away from you and your home. And, of course, if you do become ill with an unexplained illness, please see your doctor right away.
Dr. Paul Edestad, state veterinarian from the Department of Health, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Global Kirky, New Mexico's 9th annual celebration of world music and culture, returns to Albuquerque's National Hispanic Cultural Center September 20th and 21st. Catch Leon Russell, Pancho Sanchez, Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, Solas, and other artists from around the world performing on 3 stages over 2 nights. Tickets at the NHCC box office. More info at globalkirky.org. A message from the tax-exempt AMP Concerts.
1229 here at KSFR. Imagine teaching math by rescuing stranded whales. A Santa Fe teacher is doing just that in a virtual sort of way. Here is KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
Picture a baby whale stranded in shallow water just off a beach, fighting for its life. Suddenly, a group of fifth graders show up with pencils, paper, and calculators and figure out mathematically how to save the whale. That's the experience a group of Santa Fe school children are going to get, figuratively at least. In an effort to make learning more fun and understandable, a teacher here in Santa Fe is designing a series of, quote, rescue scenarios, end quote, with mathematical solutions and using them as teaching tools in her classroom. Heather Hurd teaches at the Aspen Community Magnet School and got the idea from a book she was reading about a stranded whale and the attempts to save it.
What I'm going to be doing is reading a selection of the story that really gets the kids totally caught up in the problem, which is that this swimmer has a baby whale following her, and she's exhausted and tired herself and needs to get out, but the whale needs to be saved. So they are going to be given the math of survival for a swimmer in the ocean, and they're going to be given sets of data that they have to use to come up with a solution. They're going to become the swimmer, basically, themselves, and they have to decide whether they can survive in the water to save the whale or not. The math project comes from an organization called Mid-School Math, and Santa Fe Public Schools are involved in an initiative with them where we're developing rich stories that can be used in the classroom as a medium for teaching math.
Ms. Hurd plans to use other scenarios she's working on for future problems.
So So my particular theme will be synaptic survival. So I'm looking for really great stories and hopefully embedded in literature and true stories related to survival and where math has to be used for problem solving. But other people in my program have stories that they're creating from adventures like climbing Mount Everest or surviving travel through the Bermuda Triangle or going back into ancient Aztec Mexican history and building pyramids. So they're all in designed to engage students in getting caught up in a story and then having to solve real math problems.
This type of learning is one that students tend to enjoy the most and learn from easily.
It's like taking a story on a flat page, and instead bringing children into that story and making it come to life, which is how all of us love to learn, especially children.
She's taking her time introducing this notion to the students.
And I'm using my instincts about when to bring it into their experience. And I think I'm going to spend the next few weeks still laying the groundwork of developing their self-concept as problem solvers and kind of engaging them in short, quick, fun, engaging problem-solving stories to kind of get them ready.
Heather Hurd with the Aspen Community Magnet School.
What I really love about it is it's as a teacher, it's bringing my own experience to life in my classroom, and it gives me the opportunity to be nourished by working with others and by having new mentors of my own. So I really recommend if people who are interested, 5th grade through 8th grade teachers, to tune in and find out more about it, because it's very exciting. It's kind of my own call to adventure, which is what we're all wanting to bring our students into in our math classrooms.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Lenzik is proud to present Maria de Barros, singing the music of the Cape Verde Islands, on Thursday, September 12th. De Barros carries on the tradition of her godmother, Cesaria Ivora, bringing Cape Verde's mix of African, Brazilian, and Portuguese music to audiences around the world. For tickets to Maria de Barros on September 12th, call 988-1234 or visit ticketsantafe.org. The Lenzik is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
12:33 now here in the KSFR newsroom. The bottom of the hour is an ever appropriate time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
The other day I received an email that read, "We came here from Big City about 8 months ago. Love everything about Santa Fe except drivers. Thought Big City was bad, but I do believe that the drivers here are the worst ever. I think the autos for sale here should come without turn signals so that at least there would be an excuse. OMG. Almost got clipped a couple of times yesterday. So, if I don't get killed on the streets, I will enjoy my stay here for as long as I can. Thanks for letting me steam off." The email was signed by two people, new residents, who are already saying bad things about our drivers. If you want to give these people who denigrated our great drivers, you can visit them at 1111 Camino Entrada de Don Hagano Loco. I'm lying. That's not their address. It's actually my street address. Oops, lying again. 2 lies in 10 seconds. I should have been a politician. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.